Show the Toncast. My guest tonight is Todd Robert Anderson.
Hi,
thank you for being here, Todd.
Oh, my pleasure.
Let me just take a moment just to thank our sponsors, Snappies, because life is short. Make it snappy. Snappies, very fast food.
Thank you, Snappies. It's very delicious. I would like to get a Snappies burger right about now.
Todd, let me ask you first.
I apologize. My representation booked me on this thing. I'm not 100% sure who you are.
My name is Steve Hicks.
Steve Hicks. Is this a regular thing that you do?
It is. I call it, I choose to call it Kibitz with Hicks. I have people on to have conversations, brief conversations.
You call it Kibitz with Hicks, but yet it's a Toncast?
That's what I call it.
Okay.
That's what I call it.
But you're representing the people who put the show out there call it the Toncast, but you call it Kibitz with Hicks?
That's what I call it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's known as the Toncast, but with me and my wife, I call it Kibitz with Hicks.
Okay. Which name does your wife like more? Kibitz or Kibitz with Hicks? Or
she likes Toncast.
Okay.
But I like Kibitz with Hicks.
Kibitz with Hicks is a great name for a podcast. I mean, I would prefer to listen to that than the Toncast. But, see, okay. I mean, I don't know. But my people just book me on these things because I'm a major TV personality.
Well, yes, and that's it brings me to my next point. Todd Robert Anderson is an esteemed author, writer, director.
That's true.
Actor and I am. Producer as well. He's very well known on television. You probably know him from any number of commercials. For certain.
Well, I didn't produce any of those, but yeah, I mean, it's like, that's what I do as an actor.
Yes, yes, that's what he does to
produce other things.
Support and provide for his family. He's also a very, very opinionated and wonderful guy.
I don't think it's fair to call me opinionated. I don't have strong feelings.
That's fair. That's fair to say. Todd, let me ask you this.
Okay.
What makes you happy? Now, spare me the sunsets and that kind of stuff. Like, what specifically makes you happy?
And I can't say sunsets?
Preferably no.
Okay. What makes me happy? First and foremost, I mean, the thing that makes me most happy currently is orgasms. Having orgasms and having my wife also have orgasms. That makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two is I have a son. I don't know if you know this.
You have a... I said no sunset. Are you talking...
No, it's not a sun rising. I mean a sun, like a S-O-N.
Oh, I'm sorry, a small boy. Yeah.
Small boy.
Yep.
Small boy. That's a massive assumption on your part that I don't have a 25-year-old son. But you're right. I do have a small child who's turning 6 in a couple weeks. And there's certain things... that happened to him. I mean, he makes me happy because he's a good kid, you know, essentially. I mean, I agree with Louis C.K. in that all kids are assholes. And my son has his asshole qualities, but There's also it makes me. We took him to Disneyland, for example, last week to celebrate his 6th birthday, and he made me happy. I mean, the way he experienced Disneyland is the way I experienced Disney World when I was a child. My parents taking me to this place, and it's very... Disneyland is actually very special. And I know that, you know, there's... it's not cool to say that because Disney, the company, it's very corporate. And the way Disneyland is run is somewhat fascist, I guess, and they don't let people wear, you know, their religious garb and all that stuff. And I get that, and I get the tension there. But Disneyland is amazing as an amusement park because it's so well taken care of. You know, in any other amusement park, if you went to Six Flags Magic Mountain, you went to Universal Theme Park, if they had It's a Small World, the you know when was the last time you went to Disneyland?
Not long ago, 6 months ago.
6 months? You go regularly.
We go a lot. Yeah.
So you know that they keep.
I know every nook and cranny.
The way the way Disneyland works.
Preach of the choir.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we actually went with a bunch of people who had the season passes. They go there all the time. They go there. Well, they go once or twice a month, which. I could not do. Me personally, I could not go there.
Well, let me explain
that much. Yeah. I don't understand it. It seems weird. But
let me explain the concept behind a season pass. The idea of a season pass, this is how I was sold on it, and I agree with it, is that a season pass, you spend, if you're going to go there 4 times in 1 year, if you have a kid or whatever, then financially
it makes sense. If you go 4 times in 1 year, then it makes sense.
It makes financially... make sense. But the reason behind the season pass is that, especially if you're going to go more than 4 times in 1 year, is that you can go there for lunch. Like, and you don't have to, because the thing is, when you go to...
But if you're driving...
Wait, here's the thing is, if you go to Disneyland or, you know, any number of amusement parks, I feel a tremendous amount of anxiety... And that you got to ride these all rides, you got to wait in these lines or whatever. Whereas if you have a season pass, you can go and just ride the Indiana Jones ride, right. And not feel like, oh man, we wasted all this fucking money. We spent $60 for today. What, we go on one ride?
80,
I don't
always,
80 bucks. Because I don't want to wait in line for all these rides. I like to ride
I get that. Yeah. I get that if you live.
Close.
In this the Princess Castle. Like, if you live in the park. That makes sense. But if you have to commute down to Anaheim, on a good day, it's a pain in the ass. From the valley. Actually, from anywhere in the greater Los Angeles area, if you have to get out to Anaheim, it's a pain in the ass.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
Okay. All right, we'll agree to disagree.
And that will be, we will hearken back to that. Agree to disagree, we should just call A to D. A to D. You know, because Todd and I have a...
All A to the motherfucking D on that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. So, I see what you're saying. Actually, you make... I don't disagree with your sentiment.
Yeah.
I think...
But you also have to like Disneyland.
You have to like it too much. Because I was there for a day.
You're insulting
me.
And saying that you're insulting me. But you are, because you're putting judgments on it that reflects badly on me. Because I like it. And I like having season passes. And
you're like going every weekend.
No. It doesn't...
How often do you go? Once a month?
5 times a year.
But unless you're going at a bare minimum, I mean, because to get in the park, it's $80. To get a season pass, it's like $250.
It's $250
to $300.
Yeah.
So in order for that season pass to matter, you have to go more than 4 times a year.
But what you're saying to me, Todd, is that be the equivalent of me saying to someone who like gets a membership to the Egyptian, you know, or you know, to one of the movie clubs or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
A movie club.
Yeah, exactly. They buy in, well, they buy a membership to the Egyptian where they see, you know, free movies and all that type of stuff. And it's like, I don't know, it's $100, I think on Groupon or something like that, it's $100. $150, $175 for the year, you know, and you get special privileges. That's like me saying that.
What
like,
are the well, special privileges does, at a movie house?
You get invited to premiere screenings and stuff like that because they have.
That's it.
They have, well, but they, but there's probably 10 per year. Yeah.
There's no like hookers or anything.
No, nothing like that. But so, but what you're saying to me is the equivalent of me saying like, oh, well, anyone who did that just likes movies too much. And I can understand someone saying like, well, fuck you. You know, like, I mean, I love movies, so F you. But there's a lot of people that would say that. That would say like, well, you know, anyone who buys that, I mean, who spends $175 on a movie theater, like, come on. I mean, you know, what is that? But no.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I was just trying to talk finance as far as if you're going to get a season pass to Disney, if you're the kind of person who maybe will go 4 times a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it definitive? You go 4 times a year?
No, I'm saying 4 times, I think 5 times a year, then it pays itself off. If you buy a season pass, then, you know,
sure.
It makes it financially, you know.
Solvent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Okay, so here's what my point of view. Yeah. This is just me.
Yeah.
This is just me. It's not everybody. Because the people that we went to, like all the people who were there, we met up, we had lunch. For what, I would just like to say, though, that if you're the kind of person who wants to go to Disneyland just for lunch, that seems stupid to me. Because... Because lunch at Disney sucks. I mean, it's shit. It's shit food. They give you a shitload of it. It costs a lot of money to get lunch. So, and you don't get a free lunch for having a season pass. No, so no. You have your season pass.
What I was
you
actually...
drive down to Disneyland. You spend $72 on a crappy lunch. I mean, we got these burritos. They were huge.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get through them because they tasted like shit. They were made out of like rat meat. They killed Mickey
Mouse.
What I actually meant
by that, though, Todd, was that... and you're right. If you have lunch in the park... fine. What I meant is that you can go to Disneyland, you can go on one ride, and then have lunch in downtown Disney, which is great. The food is fucking phenomenal there.
Downtown Disney?
Yeah, well,
like outside of the park.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, because they have all the Mortons and Outback.
I didn't specify that. But you can go there, you can go to Disneyland, you can go on a ride. You can hang out. You can.
But you go to Disneyland and you just go on one ride?
Well, if you have a season fucking pass, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you have a season pass, you don't feel the pressure.
But if you're going every other week, sure. But if 4 times a year, you feel the pressure of trying to get on more stuff.
Well,
I mean, I spent $80 to get in the park. I was there for my son. It was his day. It wasn't mine.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I did that he didn't want to do, there were two things, actually. He wanted to go on Space Mountain because he was like, Space Mountain looks awesome from the outside. It's just a giant mountain that's white and you, we showed him, some, you know, industry videos of Disneyland that were on Netflix, and he saw Space Mountain. It looks awesome because you get in a spaceship and you fly through all these lights and then you're in the darkness. But we were explaining to him, it's very intense. You're on a roller coaster. It goes high, and you can't see anything. So it's kind of terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but I really want to go on it. And I said, I'll tell you what. Let's get in line for one of the more outdoorsy coasters. So we got in line for Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Which, you know, he saw from the outside. It looks awesome. It's kind of awesome.
It's wonderful.
I mean, that's what I'm saying about Disneyland is the fascism and all that stuff, the politically incorrect stuff that happens. That's why it's awesome. That sounds terrible that I'm saying fascism is why it's awesome, but because they're so hardcore with their employee, because everybody there, when we're like, how do we get to Fantasyland from here? Someone's like, very happy to tell us. That doesn't happen anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And also, everywhere you go, it's so well manicured. Every single little garden, the flowers are blooming. There's no anything. We were, I'm getting sidetracked here, but we were on, in line, just take a train from one land to the other. Mm-hmm. And there were these chicks, and they were drinking sodas or something, and they just fucking dropped their sodas in the bush. Mm-hmm. And this mom came up and said, hey, is that your soda? And this girl went, oh, yeah, that's my soda. And she goes, there's a trash can right there. Why wouldn't you throw it out in the trash can? She said, I don't know. I didn't see the trash can. I'd get it now, but my arms are too short. This awesome, you know, mm-hmm. passive-aggressive fight mm-hmm. between these people. And that's as contentious as it gets at Disneyland. And that was at the end of the day when everybody in the park gets tired by the end of the day and mm-hmm. a little bit cranky. So they start getting into it with people if something like that happens and it encroaches upon their character. Yes. But I loved that because at Six Flags, that would have been an immediate fist fight. And that's the difference between fascism and just crappy capitalists.
And that's the difference between beer being served and not being served.
Yeah, but they serve beer over at California Adventure,
but not in Disneyland.
But there's a crossover.
I know there's a crossover. I know there is.
And obviously these girls had been drinking, and then they were having sodas to freshen themselves up, and they're like, fuck it.
So
because they were having a good time. That's a massive assumption. But anyway, so we got onto Thunder Mountain Railroad, me and my kid and my wife, and we were getting on. And I was excited because I remember Thunder Mountain. I loved Space Mountain as a kid, but Thunder Mountain was my favorite, mm-hmm. you know? And I forgot why. I forgot why I liked it so much. And I got on, you know, we waited in line. It wasn't, you know, it was an off day. It was the middle of the week, so off day. So the lines weren't long. So it was no big deal. So we were in line for 15 minutes, which really isn't a big deal. You know,
no, not at all.
If you're in line for anything,
45 minutes is when it starts to get a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. But if even like Haunted Mansion, we were in there, we were in that line for maybe 35 minutes.
So you're there.
But
2 days
you get
ago?
To, I was there 3 weeks ago, I think.
So Haunted Mansion's up. They're doing it.
Yeah, but Pirates was down when we were there.
All right.
Because they're switching everything over for the holiday.
Gotcha.
But Haunted Mansion already been switched over the holiday, so it was a Tim Burton thing. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. But the thing about Haunted Mansion's awesome is when you're waiting in line, there's all those gravestones that are funny, and it's there's a lot to look at when you're in line.
Yes,
which is another thing that's great about Disneyland. But when the lines are too long and they spill out into the walkway, then fucking sucks.
Nah, terrible.
So, but this was a good day. It was off day, so it was sure. So anyway, so we're in line for Thunder Mountain, and Colby's stoked. Colby's the name of my kid. I don't know if you know that.
It's your young son?
He's my young son. Mm-hmm. He is turning 6 in a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And we were celebrating his birthday early because my wife had the day off for Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year.
Your wife, then I'm assuming, is a school teacher?
School teacher.
Teaches children.
But not all. Yeah, but they're a progressive charter school, so they have certain Jewish holidays off.
Hippies?
Yeah, they're all hippies. They're all, everyone at my wife's school is stoned on pot. And it's a fucking travesty. I hate it. I'm an open court school guy. I like stringent, you know, get to this place at this point with the math and the science. But they have to meet all those goals, but they do them progressively. So they teach kids without forcing the kids to learn, and that pisses me off. Anyway, it's like it's a hard thing because I'm married, mm-hmm. you know, and we have a kid, and I desperately want a divorce because of her school's philosophy.
I don't like hippies.
I don't. I don't blame you. We're on the same page. Hippies are shit. I hate hippies. But anyway, so my kid and I were in line, and my wife, we're all in line to get on the roller coaster. We did everything together, you know. So we got in line for the roller coaster. And then when we got right out, we waited in the 15 minutes. And it was exciting because the line, if you're only in the 15-minute version of the line, there's a lot of stuff to look at. It's very exciting. So Colby was very excited. And he got up and he saw the roller coaster and it pulled up with all these people and immediately said, I don't want to do this. And I said, and we like did a little bit of the horrible parent thing where you go, man up, you know, but we weren't saying man up, you pussy. We were going, are you sure? Are you going to regret it? If one of us goes on the ride and you don't, are you going to regret? And he went, no, I'm not big enough. I should not go on this ride. Like based on the just roller coaster riding up to the.
Fair enough.
And we said, that's cool. And my wife, God bless her hippie soul, said, why don't you go on the roller coaster? And I went on the roller coaster by myself, sitting next to some small child who was looking at me sadly. And I was like, I swear my son was going to go on the ride with me, but he pussied out. You're awesome, though. And we did the ride together, and I got. And it was like, as soon as it started, I was like, I'm so glad he chose not to go on this ride. It's horrifying. As a tall person on Thunder Mountain, I'm 6 feet tall. There's so many moments in that ride where you go, I should probably lower my head. There's no way an NBA, a professional NBA player, they must, like if Robert Parrish, I know that I'm dating myself, but... You know, any NBA, modern NBA player who I don't know about because I don't follow sports gets onto that ride, they must have to say, you have to wait with the people under 40 inches tall because you'll die. You'll be decapitated. Mm. But the other thing about that ride is that I forgot about is it goes through these hills and it's crazy. And for a roller coaster, you know, it's not up to Six Flags standards of 1,000-foot drops and, you know, going upside down and, you know, all that shit. But... It's like really fast and jerky, and it goes into complete darkness a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you're in daylight, and then you're in darkness, and then you're in daylight. And if my, you know, 5 going on 6 kid had done that, he would have been very upset. So he made the right goddamn choice. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of him. Yeah. Well, I've gone on too long about my Disneyland experience. So.
Well, then let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about age 11.
My age
now, that 11? Would be, you're almost 40. You're going to turn 40 in January, I believe, right?
Unfortunately, yeah.
So age 11 would be 1982.
Sure.
I think. Yeah. So let's start at age 11. That specifically that year, if God, you remember,
that's really hard.
It's tough.
I really don't remember. What grade was that in elementary?
That would have been sixth grade from probably fifth grade for you. It was sixth grade for me, but it was probably fifth grade for you.
Fifth grade.
Yeah.
Oh shit! That was a year.
Yeah.
That was my Mr. Skinner year. My friend Darren, my closest friend growing up.
Darren
Buck.
Yeah.
His name is Darren Buck. Good guy. Good guy. He just had his 40th birthday party. Mm. And it was both his 40th birthday party and he was graduating from grad school.
And Darren, we should just say, is an extraordinary musician.
He is. And he had his party, like, that he set up for himself. Was a celebration of his 40th, celebration of him graduating school, and his celebration for himself was him playing music for people. So he has a soul band. They do covers of soul music, which, again, I'm getting off track, but it's kind of awesome how he came to it, because he was writing original music, and Professor Spoon, the band that he did when you were in college and I was in college, and we didn't really know each other, but we went to the same school.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew each other, but we weren't, you know.
Weren't in any way friends.
Right. And that weird thing is what made my representation set up this interview. Because they heard that you had a podcast, and so my fans would be very interested in what you might ask me.
Well, because I've got my finger on the pulse of a different vibe, I think, than you do.
Yeah,
I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to cross brand you. They're trying to
yeah, they're trying to spread me out to. Well, I mean, you're a very mainstream America. You're like a Justin Bieber kind of guy. And I'm the edgy artist, and they're trying to make me more accessible to mainstream America.
And that's fair, and I applaud them. I applaud your people for that.
It's cool that you applaud them, because that means that you want me to be accepted into mainstream America. You don't want to leave me off, you know, in Marc Maron territory. You want me to be...
No, I think it would be best if you reached... as many ears, as many eyes as possible in our country.
Yeah.
That's the way I felt.
That's the way I feel too.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's about spreading my message.
Spreading your seed.
Spreading my seed. I want to put my seed into as many people as possible. And as hard as possible. I don't want it to be... I'm not a soft seed spreader. It's like hard-hitting seed spreading.
It should be done with intent.
Yeah, I'm not joking around. I mean, when I put my seed into you, you know it, and it hurts a little bit. It's not that it's not pleasurable. It's that it hurts in a good way.
Yes.
yes. But anyway, to get back to Darren Bach, why did he come up? 11. I'm lost. Because I had a lot to drink before the age we started. Of 11. All right. So, when I was 11, so we were talking about Darren, and the reason why we were talking about Darren is he had a band called Professor Spoon, and now he's got his soul band, they do covers, and I was getting off on the tangent that it was awesome how he came to that, because he said, I keep writing all this original music, but none of it's as good as the music that I love, which is soul music, so I'm just going to do that. So he has a cover band, which, you know... I'm a little bit aggravated with, because I think he's a great musician and should write his own stuff. But I get that. I get that he loves that, and it's so good. I mean, he has a great, you know, soul band. But he had a band called Professor Spoon, and one of Professor Spoon's songs, when we were in college together, we didn't know each other or like each other.
Not at all.
Or respect each other at that time.
No, terrible.
Which, I mean, now we know each other. But he had a song called Skinner's Box, which was, I think, based on some kind of... something I don't know about. Some historical reference. Some... something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it's mythology, because I don't think it was. I think it was a story that somebody famous wrote back in the day.
Like history.
I'm sure anyone who listens to this podcast will write it. Was Skinner's Box is this guy's thing, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's what they were referencing. But the song itself was based out of my fifth grade teacher, whose name was Mr. Skinner. And my entire fifth grade year was a fucking waste. It was a waste. I learned nothing. I got in fights. And Skinner's Box's song is about a kid. It's based on an actual story. I told Darren that the way that Mr. Skinner, this teacher, would get kids to do what he wants, he said, if you do what I want, if you're well-behaved, I'll give you candy. So if everybody was quiet, they'd get candy. And then he would generally leave the classroom every day, leave us unattended.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is okay. I'm not 100% sure.
Possibly illegal.
Possibly illegal. I don't know. But he would leave the classroom for 20 minutes at a time. I assume he would be going. He said, I have to go to the bathroom. Everybody sit quietly, work on your thing. So he'd leave and he'd go to the bathroom. And I assume he was doing drugs. Or smoking. Maybe it was just smoking cigarettes or having a nip of some kind of delicious scotchy thing. I mean, it's like, it's all like, in retrospect, I go, I get it. I don't think he was an evil person. I just think he was a bad teacher. So he would disappear, go to the bathroom. Maybe he was just going to the bathroom and just take his time, have some time. But this one day he went to the bathroom and this kid named...
Name redacted.
Everybody called him Scrapper. He was a little kid. He was a school bully. He was a fucking dick when we were in elementary school. When I got older, I learned to like him, but...
What was his name?
Name redacted.
It's terrible. Italian is terrible. The good thing about him, though, was that he grew his own pot in high school. And but he was a fucking moron, so he grew... No, he did. He grew it outside. And he grew... he planted a bunch of pot plants in a giant pile of wood, like firewood, outside of his house. Just wanted to see if it would grow, and it did, to the point where it was 6 feet tall. So the cops were driving by his house, and they were like, what's that growing out of that wood pile? And they just pulled up to the house, and they knock on the door.
Name redacted.
His mom answered, and they were like, do you know what's growing in your wood pile? And she didn't know what the hell it was. She thought they were weeds, which I guess they were.
Yeah.
And he got in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
A lot in trouble. But he was a kid, so.
Name redacted.
Sounds like a douche.
He was a douche. But in any event, he got up. We all knew where Mr. Skinner kept the candy. It was on top of these giant cabinets.
So you could get to.
Little kids couldn't get to.
Gotcha.
Without trouble.
Yeah.
But.
Name redacted.
Stood up, like, after Skinner left to go to the bathroom or whatever he was doing. Said, I know where the candy is. And we're like, we all know where the candy is, asshole. He's like, but we can get it. I mean, this is a revolution.
No,
and we're like, holy shit, yeah, how do we do that? He's like, just give me 10 fingers. So I think it was Lance Feely, that was his name. Or maybe it was Eric Nims. I can't remember which of those two guys
did it. Both those names are great. So what he's doing right now is 10 fingers means you link the fingers together.
You link the fingers together. You lift, you hoist somebody up. He puts his foot in and you hoist him up.
Yep.
So, and he's a tiny guy. Yeah. So hoisting a tiny guy up is no big deal.
No big deal.
So it just like a crazy monkey got up there. He got the candy and he just fucking hucked this giant thing of candy around the room. And it was pandemonium. And Mr. Skinner came back to just children. Just, I mean, it must have been a nightmare. It must have been a nightmare.
But a lesson. I think a lesson
for Mr. Skinner. A fucking A lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you should quit. See, like,
yeah, well, you should reconsider some ideas.
You're teaching according to the rewards of candy.
Yeah.
But Darren's band, Professor Spoon, wrote a marvelous song. Skinner's Box, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it was a solid song.
Sorry to interrupt. But I have to address some business. I know tonight's show is particularly riveting and the topics of discussion are groundbreaking. But I will be performing at the Nutsack Cafe in Venice this weekend and the following weekend. And tonight's show is brought to you by Snappies. I myself am not a burger guy, but if you want a burger and you want it very, very fast, go to Snappies. Life is short. Make it snappy. Snappies, very, very fast food. Remember, aloha, shaka shaka.
So that was my 11th year.
Okay.
I got in a fist fight that year.
For what reason?
I've
never been in a fist
fight, funny.
I have to say.
It was the only time. Well, not the only time, but it was my first fist fight. And it was this kid. His name was Eric Ernest. Ooh. And we became best friends. In this period of fifth grade, and he was a newbie to the school. He'd like moved in, and by the time I went to sixth grade, he'd moved out. I don't know what his parents did. I can't remember. I don't think they were military, but they moved around a lot. So we became really good friends because I was a loser. not a loser, but I was an outsider. Mm-hmm. And if there was another outsider, they would, and I would go, hey, what's going on? And when you're an outsider,
20 eat lunch together.
Yeah. And somebody goes, hey, what's going on? You go, yeah, what's going on? So we did that, but then he started making more friends, and one of them was Scrapper.
Name redacted.
Poisoned his mind against me, and he... And
name redacted.
Was the guy who pushed the... Like, basically was saying, fight, 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 fight. You guys should fight. He mm-hmm. thought it was awesome. Probably because his family was constantly fighting.
Yeah, I don't... I picture a lot of moody lighting and loud volume at his house. It doesn't sound pleasant. I don't know.
His house was dark and sad. Yeah. I only was there a couple times, but it was huge and it was farmy. Mm. They had like a farmy thing going on, but his house was not well. In any event, me and this guy who he was supposedly my best friend, but a lot of people had turned against me on the elementary schoolyard. I'm not sure why. Maybe I did something wrong, but I think mostly it was because, you know, I was quiet, and I had red hair, and mm-hmm. I didn't want to get into shit. And mm-hmm. people, elementary school kids kind of gravitate towards that as far as a target.
Yeah.
So he had been talked into hating me as well on this mm-hmm. day. You know, that's how things work in elementary school. You think you figured it out,
mm-hmm.
and then suddenly you get to school, and you're fuck off. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's changed. So he was getting into it with me, and I was like, I don't fucking want to do this, you know, fuck off. And then he just slammed me in the jaw.
Mm.
He just hit me in the jaw.
So this is 11 years old.
11 years old. And I was worried for my life at that point, so I just hit him back, and it just became, it was a schoolyard brawl, and I wound up, the teachers, Mr. Skinner finally realized what was going on during this recess when I had Eric's head against a brick wall and was slamming his head. I would have killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Skinner, you know, as bad a teacher as he was, at least he caught that because I would have become a child murderer. Because at that point, I was so terrified for dying because there was all these people. I was surrounded by people who wanted to watch me get beat up and looking at a wild-eyed child who wanted nothing more than to beat me up and make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I could win was to put him down.
But there's also probably the realization, especially that young, where you don't even know I'm assuming this from you because I'm assuming that we're similar in this way, that you don't even know your own strength. So when you go into a fight, you think, oh shit, this guy's going to fucking pummel me. But then once you get into a scrap, you realize, no, like I've got the upper hand, like I can do that. And then, so then you find yourself.
And the weird thing about, you know, it's funny, now that you're saying that, I'm going back in time and I'm thinking about it. And my fighting was reserved and pulled back the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, he would constantly get, I would let him get the upper hand in hopes, I mean, and this is not me saying, you know, I was a pussy. He would get the upper hand, and then I would push him off of me and start hurting him and stop hurting him, and then he would take me over again.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why, because it didn't stop, because there was nobody there for most of the fight to pull us apart, I was constantly in a place where I could have seriously hurt him, and I stopped myself, and then he would start genuinely hurting me because every time I acquiesced to him, it became an opportunity as opposed to I'm done. And that's why it wound up with me having him pushed against a brick wall. Literally, I had one hand on his chest, pushing him against a wall, and another hand in his hair, and I was slamming his head into a brick wall, and it could, and I wasn't using full strength. I was just letting him know I could do it. Mm-hmm. And, but the fact was, is he kept like thrashing at me.
Yeah.
So if I had kept doing it, if I had let go of my own self-control, as a, this is crazy, as a fifth grader, if I had let go, but you know,
but somewhere could, you knew, I think. Could, I think I knew
it was like, this is my friend and I don't want to do this. Yeah. And he's crazy right now.
Yeah.
And the teacher finally came out, Skinner finally came out and pulled us apart. And I remember everybody was like, well, you know, he won that fight. You kind of lost it. You kept fucking falling down and letting him. And I was like, yeah, but okay. And the only guy, I remember this is a guy named Lance Feely, who was the coolest guy. You know, he got all the chicks. Even in sixth grade, I had this chick I had a crush on, and I asked her out, and she said no. And the next day, Lance Feely was going out with her. So fuck Lance Feely for stealing my bitch.
F him up the butt.
But I will say this. Lance Feely was the coolest guy in fifth grade. You know, most elementary school, he was the cool guy. And he was the one guy who took me aside and said, I want you to know. I mean, it's like, and he's a fifth grader, but it's like he knew something.
Sure, no, I understand, yeah.
He said, I want you to know. You're the guy who won that fight. And I was like...
And it takes that.
Yeah.
It takes that, honestly, when you're young, to... Yeah, you needed that.
Yeah,
you
I needed to hear that. Because you know? I didn't... the last thing I wanted to do was hurt this guy who I liked. You know, and the next day... It's fifth grade. So the next day, we're at the baseball field, and he's like, I'm really sorry about that. I feel really bad. I mean, this guy, is Eric Ernest, it was like... You know, I feel really bad. I want to be friends again.
Hmm.
You know, and I said, no.
Yeah, I didn't.
No.
I didn't make amends that easy at that age.
No, I said, I get what you're saying, but no. I mean, you wanted to kill me.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really glad you brought me back to that.
Hmm.
I feel terrible.
I feel very proud. I feel very proud of my achievement.
This is a great interview. So what's the third question?
We're going to jump to 22. 22. We're at 11. Now we're going to jump to the age of 22. So what do you remember about that? That's the year 1993 or 2 for you.
1992 or 3. So I was still I was still in college. God, you know, it's not fair to say, I don't know,
it's not fair to say what?
It's so specific.
Very specific.
Year
specific.
College and everything after is a blur of alcoholism. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what year was it? It would have been my junior year or senior year?
22. I turned 21 when I was a senior, and I'm a year younger than you.
So 22, I was out.
The year you graduated college.
Oh, the year I graduated college. Okay.
What happened then? You got to remember something about that.
Oh, no, I remember shitloads about that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. So then...
I actually graduated a semester early.
Mm-hmm.
Saved some cash.
Mm-hmm.
But I stayed in New York, which ultimately saved nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the whole reason for that was it was just a con on my parents. This is horrible. I hope my parents never listen to this. But it was just a total con.
Yeah.
Because I hated going into class, but I love being in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I hadn't spent a summer in New York before, like all the years before
junior, senior,
I would go back to Mass and I'd work.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I worked in a video store. I worked as a janitor. I had two jobs. Three jobs, actually, because I had another thing where I would just do little bitty things for these people. You know, bookkeeping and stuff like that. So I had three jobs. So basically, I'd go back in summer and I'd work and hang out with my high school buddies, which was cool. I wanted to stay in New York. I wanted to be in New York without being a student.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. was sort of the idea.
Yeah.
So the summer in between junior and senior year, because my credits were as such that my second semester of senior year, I would have had so little to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, Mom and Dad, I'll save you tuition money and I'll just... You know, I'll get this out of the way. But my dad reminded me, when you graduate college, we're done.
Yeah,
I mean, and it didn't really register, mm-hmm. you know? So I was like, yeah, totally. I'll just stay in New York. Yeah, I'll find a job and be fine. And I didn't understand the expense of New York mm-hmm. and the kind of jobs you can get in New York when you're a college graduate and all that shit. I didn't understand it. I figured, I'll do this. I'll be fine. Oh,
totally.
I'm
working Grace Papaya.
Yeah.
I'll be good.
I'll figure it out. So I did some classes that summer before senior year, which were, you know, a waste of time. But I did it, and I got the credits, so I was done, and then I was done in January, but I stayed. And I stayed in my apartment, which I had on 29th Street with my friend Andy. And
is that Andy Barth?
Andy Barth. And I got a job at the Learning Annex. As a registrar, signing up people for classes, which I only got because I had my friend Steve Falk was already working there.
Who didn't work at the Learning Annex?
That's all my question. At the Learning Annex. Actually, maybe he can, I can't remember the order of things.
Frank, you, Falk?
Maybe it was Frank. Steph? Yeah, Frank. No, but they came after.
Okay.
I think Falk.
It was like a pipeline.
I could be fucking railroad. This up. Yeah, Shannon worked there. Everybody we knew worked there. But it was an easy job to get because nobody wanted the job. So, and they would pay you, you know, $8 an hour, which the time was slightly above minimum wage.
Yeah.
And, you could just, all you needed was the college degree and a certain willingness to work. So we did it. You know, and it was fun, I guess, in a sad, horrible, dull sort of way. So I did that for a while, and then Falk got fired because we had... I told this story, actually, at a storytelling night in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this program called...
that Falk hosts.
Public school that Falk hosts occasionally. And nobody else in public school ever asked me to do stories. But he does. So it's like I'm liked by one person on that show. And it was clear after my last story, because the last story I told was about how drunk I was at my 21st birthday party. And the weird thing about storytelling nights is you're supposed to be funny.
Mm. That's the idea?
I think.
Okay. So it's not about honesty. It's just about being
funny. It's about telling a funny story.
Okay.
It's like a cocktail party story. Mm. Which, you know, honestly, the people that have blown me away telling the stories, their stories aren't that funny. Mm. They're just stories. Yeah. And they're honest and they have a nice arc to them.
Yeah.
So that's all I was trying. And with the first one I did... for Falk Show, it went really well because, you know, and they give you a theme like a week before, so you develop your story out of that theme.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme was like firings, you know, when you were forced to leave a job. So my story was actually about him getting fired. I didn't get fired. I wound up quitting. But I remember the whole story was, you know, we were at the Learning Annex for a long time, and then they start the business started floundering, and they brought in like corporate consultants to fix it.
Mm.
And the corporate consultant lady had a meeting. So suddenly we're, you know, all we did, we signed up for $8 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's $8 an hour.
Mm.
You know, it's a different deal, I think. If you take a salary, like a serious salary at a corporate entity,
mm-hmm.
and then they bring in consultants because their corporate entity is floundering, and the consultants say, you have to do this, that, and the other thing. If you're working for $8 an hour, they don't get to do that.
Yeah.
And that's not cool. Yeah. I mean, you're essentially a minimum wage worker at the time. Now you're a minimum. Yeah. So we were hired to answer phones, and we were brought into this corporate meeting, and she told us all these new rules, and there was upselling and cold calls and all this stuff that we said. Because, you know, the main thing I said in the interview is I will not do telemarketing. Because I had tried that. I was like, I don't like it. I don't want to do it. I won't do it.
Yeah.
If all you're asking me to do is answer phones and giving people information and signing them up for classes, fine. But I'm not doing telemarketing. And everybody in the room had made that agreement. And now they're telling us, essentially, you're going to telemarket.
Yeah.
And then she said, I want to know what you guys feel about this. I want to know what you think. And it's no holds barred. Just talk. And everybody else in the room, eyes on their feet. You know, nobody was going to say a goddamn thing. And Falk raised his hand and said, when I took this job, I specifically said I will not do telemarketing. And you're telling me right now that essentially what I'm doing is going to be doing is telemarketing. And she hadn't used the word telemarketing. So she said, well, I didn't say telemarketing. And he said, but you're asking me to cold call people and talk them into going to classes. That is telemarketing. And she said, okay, duly noted. And an hour later, we're sitting at our registrar desk answering calls, and he got called in the office and was fired for speaking his mind after being told to be honest. I myself, being a cynic, was like, what did you expect? You know, and he was like, who's coming with me? And he looked right at me, and I was like, I can't. I mean, if I leave, I'm fucked. I don't, this is my only source of income. So he was very upset with me. And then,
was he really back then?
Yeah, it was very sad. And then I called my friend Britt that night, and I told him that's what had Britt happened. Britt Layfield is a wonderful man, getting married in November. Runs a theater in New York. He's a good guy. And I called Britt, and I was like, this is what happened. Falk doesn't want to talk to me. Feels like I didn't back him up. And I was, but it was just, I don't have any other money. Not that Falk did, but I didn't get fired sort of thing, because I didn't, he made the mistake of trusting a corporate human being telling him to speak his mind. You don't do that.
I don't even think he made the mistake. He made the choice to stand up. And I also understand it, I think, from their point of view, where it's like, this guy doesn't want to do it.
Right.
I think they should have handled it differently, maybe, and said, like,
but no, the fact is nobody wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to do it.
Right, but...
And nobody was going to do a good job of it. But the fact is, and, you know, he did the right thing. He did what everybody wanted to do. But he also did what everybody knew would cost them a job. And when your only income is $8 an hour, that's a huge decision. That's not, you know, Charlie Sheen walking off Two and a Half Men. That's not that.
I think it's way bigger for Charlie Sheen, frankly, because $8 an hour, you can get that at an ice cream store.
Well, yeah, but all I'm saying is today, if your skill level, your education level, whatever, and honestly, I don't think Charlie Sheen's skill level and education level is much beyond mine, but if the best you can do is $8 an hour and you're living on $8 an hour, it's a bigger deal to lose $8 an hour than it is for a guy who has already made a bazillion dollars to suddenly walk off a show where he's making $1 million an episode.
Right.
It sounds crazy because it is crazy.
Yeah.
But if there was some actual self-righteous reason that we're not privy to, you know, or even a genuinely righteous reason that we're not privy to that he walked off the set, it's still not that big a deal. because mm-hmm. Charlie Sheen is financially okay mm-hmm. for but an extended period of
the
time.
The only argument I have in that is that I think if you're motivated, you could find another $8 an hour job within the day.
Then, yes. Then, yes. And Falk did, and I did.
Yeah.
But I you're right. I and Falk was right, and I said in the story I should have stood up and walked out with you. But I was terrified of not yeah. being able
and
to pay my rent.
I mean,
and
you don't fucking know. I mean, come on.
I didn't know. And back then, I would have gotten a job right away. Now, I don't think that's true.
No. No. Now it's different.
Now you walk off an $8 job and you're probably fucked.
Well, it's a very different environment now, for sure.
Right. So in that case, I was too paranoid. But in any event,
But I wasn't even speaking to called, you making a bad decision, Tom, right? Because I don't think that I understand.
I was being both practical, sides of it. And I understand what that. He did, and I was proud of him, and I thought he did the right thing, and I did the spineless thing. But at the same time, I made a practical decision. And I didn't have a family or anything, so I suppose I shouldn't have made that practical decision, but I'm a practical person.
Yeah.
But I did call my friend that night, and I explained it to him, and he said, "Do you want to change jobs and come work for me?" And I said, "Yeah."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I said, "When do you want me to start?" He said, "Tomorrow." I said, "Give me a day." So I went in the Learning Annex the next day, and I pretended to work for about an hour. And then I said, "Hey, can I have a meeting with you?" to the manager of Fired Falk. And she said, "Sure." And I came in, and I said, "I would like my last paycheck, please." Mm-hmm. And she said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I quit."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "No notice." And I said, "Well, that was good enough for Steve." Mm-hmm. So I at least got a little bit of revenge comeuppance.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I have to say. I'm a spineless.
No.
Terrible person.
So we'll jump then ahead another 11 years.
So it's not 11 questions. It's just questions about every 11 years.
Yeah, that's just what occurred to me at the time. So we'll now like shoot forward. From, it's actually 10 years, but it's starting at 11. So we're at 22,
mm-hmm.
we're at 21, 22, and then we'll jump to
33.
So 33.
Yeah, 33. Wow.
So 33 was, damn. Fucking iPhone to do the math. That was 2000
something. It all starts to bleed together the older you get.
Yeah, it does. It does. I turned 30 and I got married in 2003 and I was 31. Or no, I was 30, but I was turning 31 that December. All right. So
I'm 39.
Yeah. So you subtract.
So my kid is just about 6. So that's
yeah.
Basically, my wife was pregnant when I was 33.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you were living on, what was the name of that street? That apartment.
Watsika?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in Palms. It was in West LA. It was near downtown Culver City, which is a magical place.
It was the National was the exit. And then you
had to do a weird jog past the KFC there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 33. What do you got to say about that?
That was I guess a year after I had developed my chronic pain.
Yeah.
And I'd also impregnated my wife.
On purpose?
Yeah, we were trying to have a baby. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We did it aggressively. We did mm-hmm. it with
intent.
Yeah, and it became. I mean, we did it aggressively in the traditional sense for a while, and then it became. There was lab work involved,
mm-hmm.
and me jacking off in the cups, and all that stuff, which is good. It's all good. Because, you know, there's Colby and he's great. my wife was on a mission, and mm-hmm. I was her wingman. Really, that's what that was. But that year was filled for me personally. You know, was filled with because she was pregnant, and I can't remember if it was. I feel like it was 33. We were trying to get pregnant. And she got pregnant, and you know, then we had the baby. But maybe we started when I was 32. But that whole thing of being in love with a woman and her wanting to do this thing no matter what was, you know, terrifying to me because I didn't have a lot of money. And as an actor, you don't know from day to day how well you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of how hard you worked or how good you are or whatever it is. Or what vision you have buying or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know. So I didn't know, you know, so that it was genuinely terrifying
mm-hmm.
to have a pregnant wife, to know a baby was on the way. And then she had her birthday in October. October 17th is her birthday, and she had her birthday. And we had a party for her birthday. And she was started to have contractions,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't due till December.
Mm.
And we didn't know what it was at first. You know, it was just a weird, because we'd gone, we went to Ireland that year. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Earlier.
Yeah, that summer. That, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that, I mean, we went to Ireland in like July. And then this happened in October. The time, it's like, it was all right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a huge year.
Mm-hmm. It was a huge year.
It was a huge year.
Yeah.
But, and I loved Ireland, and I'd gone with my pregnant wife, and she wasn't drinking, you know, so it was like not exactly the a trip to Ireland I expected, but probably was perfect as a result,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she didn't drink. I mean, she had a couple Guinnesses here and there. And when I say a couple, I mean she had a couple throughout the entire 2-week trip. But you know, and I had a lot of Guinnesses because you know it's Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
I had Murphy's too.
There's a photo. Somehow I got sent it of you. There's one of you and Hillary standing in front of Murphy's bar, and then there's one of Hillary and Shireen standing in front of Murphy's bar.
Right. In front of the, yes.
In front of the yes. marquee there.
That was in Cork.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful city.
Mm.
Filled with marvelous traditional Irish music. It's everywhere. It's great. And you can go into any pub, you know, and have a good time. The food is just awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's so bland. I mean, it's like... Mm. I like bland food. I'm not a spicy food guy. I like bland mm-hmm. food guy. But the first shepherd's pie I had in Ireland was in... And I like shepherd's pie a lot.
Yeah.
Because my mom used to make it in this like big fat pan. And it was just like potatoes and cream corn and beef,
mm-hmm.
essentially, is what it was. And it was some seasonings. And they don't put seasonings in it at all. And I don't think the... corn is creamed. It's just awful. I mean it's like they gave me this bowl of shepherd's pie and I couldn't get through it mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I've never had food that dry.
Yeah,
I that's the only way to describe it is dry.
Yeah, that's no good.
It's not good.
That's not good.
It's not good. But anyway, we had a great trip to Ireland, but she had a little complication with her pregnancy, so we wound up spending a day at an Irish hospital.
Oh, in Ireland you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, you know, and the doctors were, everything is cool. It's just, we don't know exactly what happened. But the thing that kind of blew me away, you know, and if they were geniuses like House, they would have said, you're going to have an early baby. But, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Except on television. But the thing that blew me away about them, they're like, we don't know what happened. This is a comp, and it may turn into more trouble down the line. But for right now, you're okay. But at no point did they treat us like we were retarded.
Yeah.
And that blew me away because I'm so used to American doctors treating me like, well, you didn't go to med school, so you're retarded.
Yeah.
And these people were like, and when I said, I don't understand what you just said. What? Why are you saying that? They would go, oh, well, here's this and here's that. And yeah, they would explain. And if there was a word I didn't understand, they'd go, well, here's that. Here's what that word means.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't, if I asked American, and this goes to this day, if I ask American doctors a question specifically, they'll go, yeah, I'm not going to explain that to you. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not that. They don't say that openly, but it's clear. It's like, Don't worry your pretty little head about that thing. And it's like, but if you just explain to me what the fuck you know, then maybe I could make sense. Anyway, so, but then that turn, like ultimately, Colby did come early and we spent 2 months in a hospital. And I'm pretty sure that was when I was 33.
I think it was.
And that's insane. That was insane.
Mm-hmm.
That was insane.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it really was.
You came to the hospital when Colby was in the isolate.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about that is that was that the first? Maybe that was the first. Maybe Colby was the first. It was born early. Then, strangely enough, my brother's son Cole was born 2.5 months early.
Oh, I remember
then
that.
Then BK and Candace, who had Sage, was born 3 months early, dude.
That's fucking
early. We were in Vegas. I was with BK, with my editing partner, whatever, BK, and he got a call from Candace, his wife, and she was on bed rest or whatever. She was only, 6 months pregnant. And it's like, it's happening now. I'm going in, I'm having a C-section. And so it's like we went there for the fights and we left at, I think, 12:30 at night. There was three of us, me and BK and our friend Jeremy. We started driving back and it was insane. Like, no one spoke the whole car ride home because we thought that the baby might be dead, like, when we get there.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had no idea what is going on. He had no idea. And so, oof, Jesus Christ.
That's and these babies are all
great.
All great. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, 3 months premature is that's
too much.
That's touch and go.
It's super touch and
go. I mean, the one thing that we were told over and over again, and it's still not a guarantee, but we were told over and over again that, 98% of premium babies who get the kind of care that we got at Cedars-Sinai.
Yeah.
They live, 98%. But at the same time, I mean, when you're spending every day in a NICU, you watch babies die. Yeah. I mean, there's that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's weird because it happens. So, and people always ask me, well, how did you do it? That's my favorite question, and it's like,
yeah,
it's not. No, it's, I mean, not. How did I do it? It's that the situation was thrust upon me, and I dealt with it. I mean, it's not. It's not a matter of being brave. I mean, I guess you have to be brave because a coward's gonna just bail.
Yeah.
But you've there were a lot of babies there whose parents were not there.
Yeah.
And I would imagine those were babies whose parents didn't want to have the baby.
Yeah.
To begin with. And they're like, oh, great. We get like free daycare for a few months.
Yeah. Totally.
And maybe the baby will die and then we won't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But in our situation, we wanted to have the baby and there he was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, there's no, I guess there is courage. I guess that's a part of it, but it's not. I mean, I think to me, the only courageous thing I ever did was leave the Catholic religion, was fighting against, a set belief system that I was brought up in, and realizing that there's a whole other world out there. Yeah. And instead, and I think the easy thing to do is to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stick with the way I was brought up and take that as the whole truth, as opposed to going, I'm going to divorce myself from that and understand the things that I learned from that were good and go, there's a whole world out here. I want to learn from it.
Yeah.
I honestly, that's the only genuinely brave thing I've ever done in my life. As far as Colby's concerned, you know, there's courage involved, but it was, there is no choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're caught in a survival situation,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how many people really just lie down and die? You go with it.
Mm-hmm.
You deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, the strength of your, you know, the strength of your character, I guess, comes down to whether or not you can sell out somebody or something else to get, you know, through it. But, you know, honestly, in life, how often does that really happen? There's this situation and you have to stick it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there wasn't a lot we could do except be parents who hung out and helped out as much as we could. Mm-hmm. We weren't the experts and at that particular hospital. They're really good at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my friend BK and Candace is, black, is African American, and they had a little girl that was 3 months early, and the nurse, which was a big, like, maternal African American woman, and she was like, you know what? She said this to BK. She was like, you know what? The girls do better than the boys, and the black ones, they do the best.
And it was like
in what, so like, funny. In terms of surviving. Yeah, and she was talking. Yeah, it was great.
That's hilarious.
Which is such a crazy. That's such a crazy quote to me. Like, it's so specific. You're talking about baby survival. There it is.
Well, yeah. Statistically, you can't argue with statistics. Yeah,
there it is. So what about Christmas? What's your fucking problem?
So obviously tonight's show, as endlessly fascinating as it is, will have to be split into two parts as a result of our sponsor Snappy demanding that we deliver a show within one hour. Because as you know, when you're sliding into third and you know you got a turd, diarrhea. And remember, aloha, shaka shaka. Do you have a poopy diaper?